This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Is Hillary Clinton right about the DNC and how Democrats have challenges just in terms of modeling their data and using it for purposes of better politics? This is Chris Graham, and this is the Street Knowledge Podcast, and thought I would weigh in on that topic this week. You know, there's so much in politics, it's hard to weigh in on. And we may talk a little later in the podcast about Donald Trump and the Paris Climate Agreement. But what jumps out at me is the controversy being flamed up a good bit by Democrats regarding a interview that Hillary Clinton gave this week. She was asked during a talk with the Recode, sort of a live interview in front of an audience, that her thoughts on what went wrong during her 2016 campaign. And what's gotten the ire of Democratic loyalists, some Democratic loyalists, I should say, is her pointed criticisms of the DNC and its data mining efforts. And for those who aren't familiar with how parties get information and use it to try to get the vote out, I've had experience in this realm. It feels like a lifetime ago now, but from 2008 to 2010, I was a chair of a local Democratic Party committee in Virginia, Waynesboro, Virginia, where we're based. And it's interesting looking back on it now, what I learned during that process. That 2008 to 2010 period was included, encompassed the 2008 presidential election, obviously Barack Obama, his first presidential election win. Also U.S. Senate candidate, then candidate, now two-term U.S. Senator Mark Warner ran for the first time in 2008. And in 2009 was a governor's election year, gubernatorial election, three statewide elections that year, including lieutenant governor, attorney general. So as someone who was a chair of a local Democratic Party committee, among my many jobs, which encompassed everything from setting up booths at fairs and all the glamorous, sexy stuff that you don't think about when you think about signing up as a Democratic Party chair for a local committee. It also included having access to a data system, for that could be used and was used for helping get the vote out. And we worked with, I know in 2008, I took over as the local Democratic Party committee chair in the middle of that year. It was sometime around late May, early June of that year. We worked closely with the Obama campaign, interestingly enough, in little old Waynesboro, Virginia. We had a staff person assigned by the Obama campaign who worked with us in Waynesboro. And part of my job was to help recruit people to go door to door with the Obama folks and make sure, because it was interesting how they worked that process. There was a system that had been maintained, built and maintained by Virginia Democrats that looked simply, Virginia is a hard state for those who, whether you live here or live outside of here, to get information, good information on voters and their leanings, because we don't register by party affiliation in Virginia. I'm not sure how many states are like that, but I know Virginia is a weird state in that respect. A lot of states, you'll hear people say or see them say on social media, I'm a registered Democrat or I'm a registered Republican. Well, if you live in Virginia and you say you're a registered Democrat, you don't even know what you're talking about. You can't register as a Democrat. Whereas in other states, you register as a, you can certainly stay independent, but you can register as one party or another. And that's how you have access to the party primaries that are held in election years and that kind of thing. In Virginia, everything's open. We're not registered Democrats, registered Republicans, registered Green Party people or anything like that. We're all just voters. And so, so in Virginia, you've got to work hard to get a voter list that can give you an idea as a candidate or the representative of a candidate on a campaign as to who to contact when it's GOTV time, get out the vote time. And so the way Virginia's, I know at least on the Democratic side, I can't speak for the Republican side, but I know on the Democratic side, essentially the predictors, at least from the outside looking in model, would look at whether or not a particular person voted in a party primary, and then the algorithms would determine your status, whether you were a hard, a strong Democrat, a leaning Democrat, independent, leaning Republican, or strong Republican, based on, okay, did you vote in a primary? Did you vote in multiple primaries? Did you vote in this on one for one side, one for the other? I threw them off, to be honest. our policy here at Augusta Free Press always was, we wanted to be on the mailing list for whatever reason. I'm looking back on it now thinking it was kind of silly, but we wanted to be on the mailing list for to get the party info for both Democrats and Republicans. And so we strategically, my wife and I, strategically, one of us would vote in the Democratic primaries, the other would vote in the Republican, and I voted in the Republican ones. That I wanted to get my name on the Republican mailing list just so I could see what the Republican candidates were telling their supporters, and then, my wife, because she would vote in the Democratic primaries, we would get the Democratic mailings. And thinking back, we're willingly signing up for junk mail. That's interesting, but we did that, and so the system actually had me as a leaning Republican. I kind of had fooled the system in that respect, but that's how it worked. Now, the Obama people in 2008, and then followed back up in 2012, what they did to add to that, their goal in 2008, as they explained to me in late May, early June, and they followed through with it all the way through Election Day, November, was, okay, we got that information. We've got what this system has spit out in terms of whether or not you're a strong Democrat, a leaning Democrat, independent, leaning Republican, or strong Republican. And we're going to now go knock on doors of those who are listed as strong Democrats or leaning Democrats. And we're going to ask them a few questions, and then the responses to those questions will help us determine, okay, was this information essentially accurate that was given to us by the algorithms? And it took a few months, actually. The summer months were spent canvassing. I know this happened in Waynesboro, so I presume this happened across the country. But a few months were spent knocking essentially on every door on the list of those strong Dems, leaning Dems, and I think independents were probably worked in there too, just to get a sense of where they were. So a few months were spent, doing that reconnaissance, right? Knocking on doors, going back if you had to, because you can't presume when you knock on a door if somebody's not there that you just cross them off the list. It was important to get the information right. So for a few months, local Democrats spent the summertime pounding the pavement here in Waynesboro, and again, I presume across the country, directed by the Obama campaign, to try to perfect that information that came from the way we had to do information in Virginia without having party registered lists. So then there was a second round after the, I would say about 3 months were spent just trying to perfect that information. Then I want to say it was in early October that all those doors that had been knocked on the first time through were knocked on again in about a 3 week period. And that was to kind of follow up on the information that had been gathered, and then try to also predict intensity of a person, and whether or not they would go out and vote. And then all that was redone in the 4 days before the election. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, doors were knocked on one more time, all the doors. So we needed a lot of volunteers, obviously, to do that in that short period of time. And that was part of the get out the vote effort. That was the get out the vote effort. And again, this was done in little old Waynesboro, which is in a red part of Virginia that did go blue in 2008, 2012, and 2016. 2008 was the first time Virginia had voted for a Democrat candidate for president since 1964, Lyndon Johnson. So long, long time. And so I'll credit the Obama campaign for its effectiveness in getting, turning that around. I mean, it didn't just happen by accident. It was a lot of hard work that went into that. So I tell you all that to then now provide some analysis, and my thoughts at least, on Hillary Clinton's challenge of the DNC modeling, And some other criticisms I've heard pop up since, you know, in response to that, both positive and I guess some negative criticism, certainly. One thing that I've read is I've seen some other Democrats pipe up and say, hey, she's not off base here, even though that, you know, there are certainly some internal Democratic critics saying that Hillary's blaming the wrong source when she throws shade at the DNC. There are some who say that the Obama folks weren't very very altruistic in terms of sharing their information, that they'd gathered, kept it separate from the DNC. And so all that hard work that went into 2008 and 2012 wasn't something that either Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders would have had access to necessarily, at least in great detail, in 2016. I can't speak for that, but I'm hearing people say that, and I'm not surprised, because again, this effort I knew all along was something in 2008 was directed by the Obama campaign, not by the DNC. The Obama campaign had a great battle plan. They went out and executed it twice. The man won majorities in 2008 and 2012, first Democrat to get majorities in the popular vote, majority being 50% plus, dating back to the 1960s. You know, we've had Bill Clinton was elected twice president in the 1990s, but he didn't get a majority of the popular vote in either of those elections. Those were elections with a third-party candidate. Both times it was Ross Perot that allowed Clinton to win with a plurality. Hillary Clinton got a plurality last year. She had, obviously, we all know, 3 million more votes nationwide, about a 3% win nationally over Donald Trump in the popular vote. But because of third-party candidates, she was around 49%. So that was actually a relatively high number, but still not a majority. Barack Obama got two majorities. So, you know, that doesn't surprise me to hear some folks saying that, hey, you know, the DNC information wasn't very good because the Obama people didn't share it very much. Again, I can't speak to the accuracy of that, but I'm not surprised to hear that if indeed that is a fair criticism. I would also throw this in, and I think it's not exactly what Hillary Clinton was saying, but I think it's a very fair criticism in general of DNC that. And I've made this point before, I think on a podcast a month ago, but I think it bears repeating, that Democrats largely, and very generally speaking, have not paid good attention to nuts and bolts GOTV efforts, and not just at the presidential level, but it doesn't take much to look at certain data points like the number of votes cast in congressional elections over the past few cycles and see that the fact that Congress is – the House of Representatives is majority Republican when the actual number of votes that are cast are majority Democrat tells you that what Republicans have been successful in doing is taking care of business at the redistricting level. And how do you do that? It's because Republicans have been successful in winning local and state elections for – legislatures, you know, House of Delegates in Virginia. There's a House, I'm sure, whatever your state, if you're listening from a different state, you may call it a House of Representatives, you may just call it a House. But, you know, redistricting done at the state level can allow, and I know this is the case in Virginia. You know, Virginia's got right now all three statewide office holders are Democrats, the governor, attorney general, lieutenant governor, both U.S. senators are Democrats. The last three presidential cycles have gone Democratic, and yet 8 of the 12 members of Congress are Republicans, in spite of the fact that the majority of votes cast for congressional candidates were for Democrats. And our House of Delegates is close to two-thirds majority Republican, again, in a state with all these Democrats winning at state level. So you have Republicans having that ground-up strategy. They control the local level, which means they control redistricting, which means we can vote majority, you know, nationwide. We can vote majority Democrat for the House. We can vote in Virginia for a majority, you know, Democrats in the House, and yet still have Republicans in control of that House of Congress because the system's been gamed. And I'm not criticizing Republicans for doing that. That's the way the game's played, and they're playing it well. Democrats need to fight back. A problem with this is I recognize this, and I recognized this 20-plus years ago. And again, just looking at Virginia, I've covered Virginia politics since getting out of college in the mid-1990s. I've written for newspapers and weeklies and for Augusta Free Press the last 15 years. And in the 1990s, Virginia's General Assembly was still controlled by Democrats and had been for a long, long time. And in the late 1990s, Republicans won enough seats in the House to actually force a power-sharing agreement. And the 2001 redistricting was done in such a way that essentially Democrats in Virginia traded off, give us some seats, we'll give you some seats. We'll draw the district line so that we all incumbents all get to win re-election, but it turned out that gave a slight advantage to Republicans at the state legislative level. And in 2011, you know the Republicans really keyed on the statewide races in 2009. That one of those years I was a Democratic Party chair in Waynesboro, and Republicans won all three of those statewide races. They increased their majorities in the House, had a majority in the Senate. 2011's redistricting was very positive, obviously, towards Republicans, and that's where we are now in Virginia. We've seen that play out across the country. Republicans have won, you know, a vast majority of governorships in recent years. They've dominated at the state legislative level across the country in recent years, and it seems like all Democrats can get their voters energized about is every 4 years running for president, which is fine. If president was the only position that mattered, but as we saw with Barack Obama, he had 6 years of a Republican Congress essentially that served as a check on anything he really wanted to do. And then of course the way our electoral college skews right now, it skews in favor of those states that vote for Republicans. You know, the electoral college is a system that's been in place since the founding of our country back in the 18th century. And one of the flaws of that system, and I'm not crying partisan tears here. I'm just pointing out that it's a flaw that right now benefits Republicans at the expense of Democrats. But, you know, the electoral college, is based on the number of congressional seats that one has, including the two Senate seats. And of course, you know, that gives more weight towards smaller states because those two Senate seats are for every state. New York has two Senate seats. California's got two Senate seats. So does Montana, you know, a state that has one member of the House. They have two Senate seats. So that tells you the population is the population base is skewed towards those smaller states, and right now the smaller states are largely going for Republicans. The two big states in the country, New York and two of the three big states, let's just say, New York and California are strong Democratic states. Texas is a strong Republican state. That state's not competitive. Neither are New York and California. They're not competitive for Republican candidates to run at the national level. Florida is the biggest competitive state. And this time around, it tilted towards Republicans. But what we see here is, you know, because of the, you know, the Electoral College skews a bit right now towards Republicans, and certainly the representation in Congress, because of what Republicans have done at the state level, skews towards Republicans. We've got a system that is the Democrats have allowed to become broken because of the lack of attention to detail at the local level, local and state level. And that, again, that's not what Hillary Clinton was saying. She was talking specifically about DNC and data and the data being bad. But I would say that it would be a very fair criticism, one, I think, to point that out, because again, we've seen some Democratic insiders complaining in the wake of this Hillary Clinton criticism that the Obama people were not very sharing with their information they'd gathered in 2008 and 2012. And then also and as a result, the DNC not having a good base of information for candidates, whoever would have gotten the nomination last year, to work from. But also then Democrats, again, yeah, they're not paying attention to detail at the state and local level. And that's been a problem dating back, again, I'd say to the at least to the 1990s. The whole arc of my career as a political journalist, that has been an overriding issue for Democrats, is that, you know, they're just not dotting their I's and crossing their T's. And so, you know, there's one thing, though, about some of the critics of what Hillary Clinton had to say about the DNC data specifically, and I think is right. Whether the data was good or bad or incomplete, there's always – data is data, and then how you use the data is a question too. And certainly there are valid criticisms of the Clinton campaign and whatever they did with whatever data they had access to. You know, the fact that it's very apparent that the Clinton campaign failed to see voter trends in Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania, particularly three states that have been a firewall, we called it during the 2016 campaign, but were you know, longtime Democratic states that Donald Trump did surprisingly well in, won all three of those states, and even though he lost the popular vote by 3 points, he ends up winning the presidential election because he wins those three states in the Electoral College. You know, the fact that the Clinton campaign didn't foresee that they needed to do more work in those states, they took them for granted and put their attention elsewhere. You know, there's definitely a valid criticism of, you know, in October when it looked that Clinton was destined to be the president, and they put more money into states like Arizona, even Texas, states that they had no chance of really winning because they weren't playing at that stage, you know, from a game theory standpoint, they weren't playing just to win. They were playing for the blowout. They were trying to not only, you know, to win the Electoral College, but win it with 400 electoral votes, but also maybe have that money that was going into those states perhaps influence some House races inadvertently, because that would be the effect, inadvertent at best, and perhaps use that momentum to build up either a Senate majority, a Senate and House majority, whatever the case may be. And, you know, they flew too close to the sun, the wings fell off, and they lost everything. Those are certainly fair points made by critics of Clinton. I'll stand on the side of Clinton and what she had to say, again, about the DNC data. I think I know internally enough to say that I think that is a very fair point she's making. And that looking ahead, you know, Democrats have obvious issues. It's proven hard for Democrats to get their folks whipped up in a frenzy, voters, that is, can get them out to polls in anything other than a presidential election year for a presidential election. But you can't just have the president and not have Congress and not have state legislatures and not have governorships to work with. We saw that again in the Obama years. He was president for 8 years and really had a hard time achieving much after those first two because of the lack of support from the ground up. And you know, I don't know. I'm not proposing that I have the solution, the answer, whatever the case may be, as to what Democrats need to do to energize their base to come out and vote in off-year congressional elections. 2018 is obviously a very important one for Democrats if they want to have a future looking ahead at 2020, and what we presume at this stage, until something happens, whether he's impeached or resigns or any of that stuff, Donald Trump runs for re-election in 2020. If, you know, strategically, 2018, very important. If Democrats can get control of either the House or the Senate or both, presumably then the investigatory powers of Congress can really ramp up, and all these delaying efforts, stalling efforts by Republican committee chairs to keep Democrats at bay in terms of investigating whether it's Russia, whether it's campaign finance, whatever they're investigating. It's harder when you don't have the machinery, control of the machinery of Congress. And so, yeah, 2018 is an important cycle, but you have to do more than bluster. You gotta, you know, we, including me and you, the average voter out there listening to this, think that elections are won or lost based on the news cycle, right? If you watch CNN or Fox or MSNBC, if you, whatever blogs you follow, news sources you look at online, you know, you think that the most important thing is, you know, those endless debates that go on. And that's not the case. Those set a tone, those set the tableau, but you know, where the rubber hits the road is the important place. And that's you know, getting out there, you know, identifying your voters, getting to the polls, and that's how you win elections. And again, I give Republicans utmost credit for what they've been able to do the last 20 years plus. They get their voters out. Even when they lose, they at least get their voters out. But they get them out at important times, which is not just every 4 years for the presidential elections, but they get them out. In Virginia, we have off-year elections. We have odd-year state elections. They get their voters out in those elections. They get the voters out for the local city councils and boards of supervisors and school boards. They get their voters out for House of Delegates in Virginia, House of Representatives, wherever you are, whatever the case may be, state senate. They get their voters out, and that's how they that's their firewall. You know, Democrats claimed an electoral college firewall that didn't exist in 2016, unfortunately for Democrats, in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. But the Republican firewall is a actual firewall, because even if they had lost the election last year, they still had the House, they still had the Senate, and they still got 30-plus state legislatures on their side. And that's how things get done in America. They almost don't care if they win the presidential election. All that means, that's icing on the cake, I think, as far as Republicans are concerned. And that's the problem Democrats have. So it all starts, though, at the vote. And I think hopefully I've given you some insight into how that process works. Hopefully I've given you some insight there, because it is a process that Democrats certainly need to improve upon. So that's wrapping things up for politics. You know, I don't know if I can weigh in too much on whatever the latest news out of the Trump administration is. We know that the climate change, the Paris Climate Agreement, is the news is what that is. I guess I'd say generally criticism of President Trump is fair and warranted, just like criticism of any politician is fair and warranted. I don't know that we're seeing anything different out of this president than we would have if Ted Cruz was president, if Lindsey Graham was president. I mean, a Republican president would have gotten out of the Paris, tried to get out of the Paris Climate Agreement. I know that there are lots of steps that have to happen. I think it's a 3-year period before we can actually formally leave. Even then, there's a 1-year cooling off period. We're looking past 2020. The next election is going to have this as an issue. The statement yesterday was a statement of formality. We all know that. But again, any Republican would have initiated this. Any Republican would have, as president, would have initiated a repeal of Obamacare. There's no question about that. So I don't know that, you know, criticisms of that, the Trump people are taking it so personally. He seems to set the tone for taking things personally. You know, keep fighting the fight, I guess, if you're Democrats, but you've got to do more than fight the fight. If you're a Democrat listening to this, and we're almost 30 minutes into the podcast, wrapping up things here real quick. If you're a Democrat listening to this, do more than share something to your Facebook wall or tweet about it. I would suggest to you that you would be best served by volunteering for a local Democratic committee, volunteering for a local Democratic Party candidate, and signing up to go out and canvass your friends and neighbors and help get the vote out in 2018 and 2020. That's how you're going to get successful in seeing the world you want to see. Complaining about it's not going to get a lot done. So there we go. Thank you for listening. And so we'll be back with our podcast next week, certainly. We'll talk. We'll try to wrap, a weekend, it seems, of UVA baseball. We cover UVA baseball closely here, UVA sports in general here on our website and our podcast. I'm presuming we'll be able to talk about UVA baseball's trip in the Fort Worth Regional. As I'm recording this, it's about 1:30 Friday afternoon. When I looked at the weather forecast for Fort Worth, it was not good. 60% chance of rain all day today. 60% plus chance of rain all day tomorrow, Saturday. Off and on rain Sunday. They got to play baseball at some point, right? They got to get that done so they can have the Super Regionals next weekend and College World Series starts in 2 weeks. I don't know how they're going to get it played. A couple innings here, a couple innings there, I guess. So I presume that next week we'll be able to talk some UVA baseball on the podcast. We're working right now. This is a couple weeks down the road. But I will be spending a week in D.C., June 12 through 16, as my wife, Crystal Graham, who is the state director of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention in Virginia. She will be in D.C. for a week-long conference and some lobbying related to suicide prevention efforts. And I'm tagging along, taking the computer with me. AFP's headquarters will be in D.C. for that week. And I'm trying to land, and I'm working right now with the staffs of Virginia Senators Mark Warner and Tim Kaine to get sit-down interviews with the senators, perhaps, that week. So we'll keep you posted on that, but that would be a great opportunity, hopefully, to get a little bit of Q&A with two rather powerful members of the U.S. Senate, both from Virginia. Mark Warner is the ranking Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee. Of course, Tim Kaine ran for vice president last year and serves on the Armed Services Committee, among other things. He's also the head of the CTE group, Career and Technical Education group in the Senate. I'm sure he'll have a lot to say if we get a chance to sit down with him and talking about the future of education in America. So looking forward to hopefully working that out. Also, tonight I'll be taking in some Nats games, so maybe we'll have some special Nats content for you that week. But I'm working on that for a couple weeks down the road. So that's coming up down the road. But I want to thank you again for listening. I'm signing off for Street Knowledge. I am Chris Graham, and if you're not good, be good at it.